This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
Jim Kawakami, the editor-in-chief of the very athletic Bay Area, Tim Kawakami.
Tim Kawakami, who's covered the NBA for over two decades, and more specifically, the Golden State Warriors over the last 12 years.
This is the TK Show.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here, TK Show, recording from the home studio. It's a Sunday night, a little extra weekend thing. I just want to talk some Giants, and who else better to talk Giants and the Athletic's senior writer covering the Giants. That's my friend, Andrew Baggerly. Bags, how are you doing tonight?
Hey, TK, I'm doing good. How are you?
I can tell you, you're in a press box right now. You are still jamming away. That is the ball scribe that you are. Obviously today, yesterday, Giants signed Matt Chapman, Farhan Zaidi conference call, I guess, today. Just any additional thoughts? We've all kind of had time to soak this in. I think many of us, certainly you, were hinting about this for weeks, if not months, that this was something that could happen. Any larger effects that you're kind of feeling now? Chapman's there. Giants have talked about it. Like, what's your larger effect of the Giants signing Matt Chapman? For an interesting, yeah, we didn't even talk about the quirks of the deal. It's very interesting. They announced it as a one-year deal, obviously with potentially 3 years or even 4 years to do this. What's kind of hitting you now about the Chapman deal?
Well, first, what's hitting me personally is I'm not only still in a press box at 8 p.m., but I'm in Goodyear. I'm way across town. So I got to drive all the way back to Scottsdale after this. But I think you brought up a lot of things that we can talk about. I'm not sure where to start. There's a lot of good ways to go about this. I would say that the structure of the deal, I think, is where I would start. It was very curious that it was termed in the header of the news release as a one-year contract. Yep. It's not a one-year contract, obviously. For competitive balance tax purposes terms, for guaranteed money in a deal, which is usually how you frame this, it's a three-year, $54 million contract. And obviously, there's two player opt-outs, and then there is a mutual option that would have to be picked up by both sides for there to be a fourth year at $20 million. But you look at the guaranteed money in the deal, basically, and the reason this was structured this way is because Matt Chapman turned down $150 million mm-hmm. from the A's in 2019. There are reports, and I haven't confirmed them, but there are reports out of Toronto that they offered him more than $100 million earlier this year. So if you were to sign a contract that would lock him in for 3 or 4 years now, he wouldn't be a free agent again until, he's in his mid-30s. And then this basically would be the only big contract he would sign, and he'd never have any chance to kind of recoup those lost dollars, so to speak. And this does allow him to have a big platform season in which maybe he could re-hit the market, or at least give himself a chance to maybe get his career earnings somewhere near where they could have been. And I think that if you're the agent, that's really important to you. And obviously, if you're Matt Chapman, that's important to you. So that's why it was structured that way. But really, a lot of people are going to look at this and say, oh, it's Farhan Zaidi. Like, here he is with his opt-outs again. I just want to buy a player's jersey and know they're going to be here. Mm-hmm. And it's a valid criticism. And it's something that he said he's going to move away from. And with the Jung Hoo Lee contract is 6 years, even Jordan Hicks's 4-year contract, This one just kind of had to be done this way for them to get the player. And they really like the player. And in Bob Melvin's case, they really, really like the player. Mm-hmm. So that's why this one was sort of negotiated where it was. And the Giants, I think, have to feel really good about guaranteeing, you know, barely $50 million to a guy who the projection said he was going to get like 5 and 90 was the floor. So, you know, I think they just took advantage of where the market was and they waited. And I think if Bob Melvin were allowed to unilaterally negotiate this deal, it would have been done before Christmas and probably would have been $100 million. But so I think that you do give Farhan some credit there for some acumen he showed and obviously some discipline, and they got the player they wanted. And by the way, Nick Ahmed, I think, is going to be the opening day shortstop. Yeah. He looks great this spring, and he is, if you look at his metrics, not only just over the years, he's really been a fantastic defensive player, and he's, you know, 4 years younger than Brandon Crawford as well. So they could be dynamic on that left side of the infield.
Do you think, knowing Farhan as you do, he was just waiting to make, you know, the winning offer for Matt Chapman at some point? Like that he was kind of the stalking horse that he was pretty much intending to get him? Or was this just like, okay, wait a minute, it's now there, let's go get it? Was this in the plan at some point they were going to come in hard for Matt Chapman, however hard they had to come in to get Matt Chapman?
Yeah, I think that was the case with Lee. And obviously he had a 30-day clock to be able to sign with the posting being set up the way it was. So, you know, and he got a lot more money than anyone thought he was going to get. And I think Farhan really liked the player and he was willing to do that. I don't think that Farhan's zeal for Matt Chapman matches Bob Melvin's, but I think he likes the player. I think he understands he makes them a better team. I don't think he wanted to maybe get involved at the contract terms that maybe the industry thought he would get. And I don't think they were going to get Matt Chapman at any cost. I think it had to make sense baseball wise, economics wise. I don't think Farhan was going to allow sort of his, I don't think he was going to have the kind of zeal for Matt Chapman that that would have allowed him to make a deal at what we thought the market rate was for him back in October. So yeah, I think a big part of this is if it makes sense, then we'll do it. And by the way, I think that Blake Snell is very similar. I think if they see an opportunity to get Blake Snell on a contract that they think is a really good opportunity, then I think they'll do it. And I think they'd even go into the luxury tax. They've already spent
almost would have to, right? Almost would have to if it's going to get.
Oh, they would have to. Yeah. They only have $7 million left to spend underneath that tax line. And even if they move JD Davis and they free up another close to $7 million, I mean, Snell. It's one thing for Boris to say, well, you know, Chapman had a finger issue. He's going to be a free agent again next year. He can save some face with the way this negotiation went. If you have the reigning NL Cy Young Award winner hitting free agency and you take a bath on the contract, there's really no way you can save face on that. So he's going to get $30 million on a one-year deal, even if that's all he gets. It's going to be a big number. And I think the Giants are weighing it, and they might go into the tax and do that. I mean, they've already invested $335 million this offseason when you count the Robbie Ray money they took on. That's a lot of money. And I think they would keep spending. There's nothing that can stop them from keep spending if they feel that it's a good opportunity.
So Farhan saying today, our offseason's over. I'm pretty much decided it's over. Of course, he did say something very similar a couple of weeks ago. So you just take it as kind of a message to Scott Boras. You know, we don't have to do anything, but if there's something, there's a deal out there, we'll do it. Is that kind of how you read Zaidi today?
Oh, I think this entire offseason, everything that Farhan has said has been calculated, you know, to try to reverse the leverage that Scott always finds a way of creating, you know, through his various media channels. So, and his various sort of outlets, you could say.
That's one way to say it.
So I think that this has been, there is a frustration, I think, that you know, the agents can put a lot of stuff out there and the teams really can't. I mean, the teams can't comment on free agents because it'd be collusion. So, you know, I think that Farhan has gone out of his way to say, oh, we're fine at this position. You know, we don't need to upgrade there. You know, when, you know, obviously they come out today and say that this is a, you know, monumental upgrade to get Matt Chapman. So, you know how they feel about the player. They can say that now.
Is it a monumental upgrade? I wasn't the hugest JD Davis fan of what he was doing out there. I know he's a good player. He's a solid player. Defensively, for sure. Way better defensively than I thought he was. Maybe surprised a lot of people. I think Chapman is just a superior defensive player. We all know that. Wasn't his hitting stats weren't great last season, but I think he is a very good hitter. Do you think it is a true upgrade at third base? Do you think they're a much better team because they have Matt Chapman?
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I mean, on some level, it is an incremental upgrade because you look at a lot of the offensive stats and really J.D. Davis was kind of a dead ringer for Chapman last year. Got a feel for the guy. He was blocked at third base at Cal State Fullerton by Chapman. And now here comes Chapman again, and as J.D. Davis is entering really his platform season before he hits free agency. So, I would expect he's going to be traded. I think that's sort of what everyone is assuming at this point. The Mariners have a need. The Angels have a need. I do think that could be something that we see happen. Maybe not right away. I mean, you do want to wait until the end of spring. You have injuries. That's why Joey Bart is still here. He wasn't traded. You want to keep those sort of insulating layers until you really have to shed them. So I don't think J.D. Davis is going to be shipped off tomorrow or maybe even next week. But I do expect that there'll be a change at some point. And yeah, it is on some level an incremental upgrade from a guy who really played pretty good defense last year. But the big thing is J.D. Davis wore down in the second half. And Matt Chapman is a guy who played 150 games hurt. And he posts every day. Yeah. And lineup continuity was going to be really important. Getting more continuity in the clubhouse, more continuity on the infield, more continuity in the lineup. And Matt Chapman he's Mr. Continuity. And Bob Melvin knows it because he's had him. So Matt Williams has had him. Ryan Christensen, the bench coach, has managed him at several stops in the minors. They really know this guy. And they really believe he's going to be a guy who brings stability all the way around.
This has been kind of a slow build of an offseason. Jung-Hoo Lee, and then the trade for Robbie Ray, in which they get rid of Haniger and DeSclafani, if I can say that correctly. Jordan Hicks then. And, there's separate pieces. But you look now, if they add a pitcher or not, and maybe they really do need one. We can talk about that later. As you look at the big picture bags, it's a very successful offseason. Didn't get the big, big, big fish, but, as I kind of look at it, they got like the best, the third best of the top guys, the third best of the level two, the third best of level, like they kind of shopped at the bargain aisle, but with some amount of money. How much better is this team after this offseason, Beggs?
Yeah, and Jorge Soler, too. I mean, this is
that's
a guy
right,
who had
right.
36 home runs in Miami. So he's a rare power hitter where you can actually project he won't have a huge power drop off in San Francisco. Normally you have to layer that in, but he's a guy who's going to hit him to the Coke bottle. So yeah. I think they feel pretty good about everything. And that's really what my story was about that I just finished writing is I went through all the boxes that they wanted to check this offseason. They wanted more continuity. They wanted better defense. They made the most errors in the major leagues last year. They wanted to address that. They had the fewest stolen bases in the majors. They wanted to get more athletic and younger and more dynamic. And now they've got a leadoff guy they feel is really going to do that. They wanted to add a starting pitcher, but not rotation filler. They wanted upside in the rotation. And even if they don't get Snell, Robbie Ray could be that kind of pitcher in the second half. And Jordan Hicks is a guy who is, they're putting a lot on him, and frankly, they need more pitching because you don't want to be relying on a guy who's only thrown 100 innings as a pro once, and that was an A-ball for the Cardinals in 2017. He's making the switch from reliever, but I'll tell you what, if this clicks and he is able to start and make this transition successfully, I mean, he's throwing 100 and it's sawing off bats and looked really good today against Cleveland in Goodyear, where I still am right now. And I mean, that's an upside play, right? That's a big upside play. It may not work, but they really did sort of shoot for the moon with those two guys. And of course, it's still a huge concern how they get the innings, how reliant they're going to be on the young pitching, who's going to really step up behind Logan Webb, especially in the first half when they won't have Alex Cobb for at least the first 2 months and won't have Ray until after the All-Star break. And you don't want to do all this work and then you're just scrambling for innings and losing series after series and you play your way out of it. I mean, I do think that another move is coming. Even if it's not Snell, maybe you find a way to get something for J.D. Davis that can help you on the pitching side. But I do think another move probably on the pitching front is coming. But just looking at all those boxes they checked off, that's what Bob Melvin was saying to me today. He's like, I don't think Farhan gets the credit for the offseason that he's had, because the way I worded it was, it's a little tough to, you know, have a gourmet meal that you want to prepare and you're shopping at the gas station mini mart for your ingredients. It's just a limited inventory of what you get in one off season on the trade market and free agent market. And so for them to check off as many boxes as they did with the players they got, I do think they have to feel really, really good about their offseason.
And they're looking at the French Laundry down the road, right? So there's that one thing sitting there. And that's one thing I've kind of said, like, you can't just compare them to the Dodgers. You can't. Nobody compares to the Dodgers. There is not a single team that can compare to what the Dodgers. The Yankees, you know, traded for Soto, but it doesn't compare to Yamamoto and Ohtani. It's just, I think it's a little, I get it. That's the team they're playing, but you can't just say, oh, they didn't get those two guys. Well, the one team got them. Only one team got them.
Yeah.
And we'll see how this plays out. From reading your stuff and just hearing what Farhan is saying, do you think there's a little bit of like, hey, maybe they don't need that much of a starter because Alex Cobb's coming on? I mean, is that, you said 2 months, so maybe I'm reading too much into this. Is it possible he's pitching something like in mid-May or late May?
Well, there's a reason they haven't put him on the 60-day IL yet. I mean, they did put Tristan Beck on today for Chapman, and they are going to need probably more spaces for some of the non-roster guys like Nick Ahmed. But there's a reason they haven't used that card yet with Alex Cobb, because I think they're going to be open-minded and see how he does. And he's doing really well so far. So there is a possibility that maybe he's back at some point, maybe in late May. I think that we're all sort of thinking maybe mid-June is most likely. But yeah, if he beats that projection, you know, by a few weeks, then you would get in a position where you get pretty close to him coming back within 60 days of the start of the season. So they're clearly being open-minded on that.
Yeah, I mean, you know, 8 starts, something like that, 8 to 10 starts. Then do you need to go spend $35 million for Blake Snell in that? You know, I don't know. I think I'm rarely in the place like just do something to do something. I think they did need to do some things just to get the fan base somewhat motivated. You and I both know how negative it's been around here. Do you think that can turn? Do you think this group can turn? I mean, you know, obviously spring training, it's always excitement. There's always optimism. That is a great place to watch baseball games there. Do you sense any slight turning at all in the fan base? Like, this could work. Maybe we shouldn't be so negative, or is it still kind of negative right now?
Hard to say. I mean, I do think that there are some people who probably should be rethinking some of the stances they took, particularly some people just seized that snippet of a comment that Greg Johnson made about the goal being to somewhat break even from a financial in terms of like their ledger at the end of the year. I mean, people took that and they turned it into let's go Brandon. I mean, they really did turn that into like a sarcastic battle cry. And I mean, the Giants are sitting there having committed over $300 million. And this is not amortized. This is not, 12 years down the road, we're going to be, it's not the Ohtani contract. You know, this is money that they are going to have to pay out within 3 or 4 years. It's over $300 million. And I think the Phillies are close to $200 million because they had the big contract with Nola. But you take the Phillies aside, the Giants are the number two spenders this offseason behind the Dodgers, and they've doubled what anybody else except for the Phillies has spent. So, you know, for people to be saying that they're a cheap ownership group is just like, it's just a patently stupid thing to say. So, you might want to rethink those statements.
Well, and also the one that came to a $350 million agreement with Carlos Correa. I mean, not blow up because they were cheap. That blew up because of the medicals. At some point, you just have to look at the dollar spend, and they did take a little bit of a back step last season in the payroll, but they're back up again this season, and I can't imagine they're going to be dropping down too far. You mentioned Brandon another way, but Brandon Crawford signs a major league deal with the Cardinals, obviously was not going to come back to the Giants. Well, he had interest, but the Farhan Zaidi clearly don't have interest in him. You've covered Brandon for so much. We all know him as such a level-headed, smart guy. He clearly felt at some point pushed away by the Giants. Is this problematic, to push away or have a player who meant so much to them, who still means a lot to the fan base, Bay Area kid, to leave feeling like that? Is a little problematic there, just the way the front office dealt with this?
Yeah, you know, I think it's complicated. And, you know, Brandon reached out to me. He had some things he wanted to express. I think he, his wife were hearing from people on social media. You know, it's people who probably aren't too educated on what goes on or pretty casual fans who were saying, why did you do this? I can't believe you left. You know, I can't believe you're signing with another team. You know, it's like, you know, it's almost like he's sullying his their memories of him by going out and being a baseball player, which is what he does. But they wanted that out there, and they wanted people to know, look, you know, I wanted to come back, and the choice wasn't given to me. They didn't want me back. And, you know, might have, I think, in retrospect, said a few things more than he probably should have. But, you know, of course, I had to call Farhan next thing and say, I think you're going to want to hear this and comment on it. And, you know, I spent a lot of time on the phone with both those guys and really agonized through every sentence of that story, because you want to be fair to both sides and you want to present their points of view. And it's news when Brandon Crawford, you know, says what he's thinking, and whether you agree with him or not, or you think, oh, look at your stats the last couple of years, dude. Why did you think that, you know, you're entitled to come back? You know, however you think of what his opinion is, the fact he has that opinion is news, because he's Brandon Crawford and he's done what he's done for the Giants. So there's no question that the story was, I was going to write the story. It's just, you know, trying to present it in a way that's fair. And you know what? They're both, I think they're both good people. They're both can be a little headstrong, and they both, I think, made some really good points, and, you know, maybe made some points where they were a little myopic, and to be true. And, you know, I think that you could say that mistakes were made by both parties, you know, either just in this last negotiation or over the years. I mean, there's no question the Giants boxed the whole Carlos Correa thing when they didn't even tell Crawford that they were signing a shortstop. You know, I mean, that was handled badly. You know, I think that this is also just kind of what happens, you know, at the end of a long careers. And the easiest thing for everybody, probably in the Giants organization, would be if Crawford had just retired. But you know what? He wanted to keep playing. He wanted to keep creating a few more memories for his kids. I think he and his wife just had a baby. Their other next youngest is a five-year-old. So they want him to remember Daddy is a big league baseball player, and they you know, they want to live the life a little bit longer. And once you retire, you retire, you're done. So you know, you don't begrudge him making that decision either. And he gets to play with Nolan Arenado and Paul Goldschmidt, guys he played on Team USA with, and you know, hopefully he has a good experience there. But I think there, as Farhan went into, there were a lot of reasons why it would have been a difficult fit in San Francisco. You can agree or disagree with him, but that's the way he felt. And you know, if someone had to tell him no, that's tough to hear, regardless of the circumstances. So I think that part of this was inevitable, but you know, obviously it could have been handled better by both sides.
Yeah, I mean, I think we can all see the logic that it would have been tough to have him be the backup shortstop on this team. There would be a lot of things pulling in a lot of different ways. Just clear the decks, sort of similar to Bochy being the manager, right? I mean, like the reminders of the past are not what this administration is about. Maybe some like holdover, like regret that Farhan gave him that 2-year extension. Maybe, I don't know. I was kind of thinking that through, like he had to give him that extension, but then it did not, you know, it did not, the value was not right there.
That's the number one thing that you can point to when you say, well, Farhan hated Crawford, or he didn't support him, or he didn't like him as a player, he wanted to get rid of him. Well, he signed him to that extension. So, you know, I mean, that kind of shuts down that argument to some extent.
Exactly. You know, and sometimes Farhan's communication skills are, you know, maybe not so great. I don't know. He gets back to me, he gets back to you, but I think there might be a bit of that, but I think the way it had to happen like this, Brandon Crawford could not continue to play for the Giants, and wish him well. There's a tradition of Giants players ending their careers in St. Louis, right? We've seen this happen before. You just get, you know, like people say, oh, it's so weird to see him. And I get it. It's weird to see him in red, but I saw Will Clark in red, right? I saw some other players in red.
Jack Clark. Yeah.
Jack Clark. Absolutely. Jack Clark. Like this is sort of what happens sometimes, and hope he has a nice, you know, final few years of his career, however long it lasts. Last baseball question.
Hope he doesn't hit a last series of the season is Cardinals at Giants. So you just hope Crawford doesn't get the hit that knocks the Giants out of a playoff spot.
Now you saying it, I think it's something like that is going to happen. Now that you say this is making it happen. Just real quickly, Bob Melvin, the manager, he's certainly a calming influence. Do you feel the difference? Do you feel, you wrote this good story about how all, the dugout now, everybody's in the dugout, everybody's set up for the national anthem, things are a little more organized. Do you feel a tangible difference changing from the Gabe Kapler era to the Bob Melvin era?
Yeah, I think there is. It's a pretty big difference. I think it's going to sound like it's a criticism of Gabe when you praise anything, when you hear praise about Bob. But, Bob has made it very, very clear. It's like, look, when I do something, it's not because, we got away from this here, so we got to reestablish this, or, it's not that. He says it's not a reaction to anything that came before him. And it's not even a reaction to what he went through in San Diego, although I think that he does want this spring to be a little more buttoned up because he couldn't establish that in San Diego because, the GM let the players get away with everything. So I do think there's a little bit, maybe, if you were to be honest, a reaction to that. But his contention is, look, I'm just here to do what I believe in and to create the kind of culture that I believe in and to run things the way that I think they should be run. And that's where it begins and ends. And, but of course there's going to be comparisons to what came before. And I think the biggest difference is that, with Gabe Kapler, he wasn't going to have people do traditional things just for the eyewash of it, whether it's, pitchers shagging during BP or, or you can do whatever you want for the anthem, whatever, I think Bob is really into, hey, we're a unit here. We're together. We're a team. We do things together. We're on time. We respect each other's time that way. And I think Gabe demanded a lot from the players, but I think he really trusted the players to be adults and to be pros. And the problem is when, things started going sideways, I don't think he really was able to be the disciplinarian that maybe some people needed. And, it doesn't mean that Bob's a taskmaster. He's not that kind of manager, but he is somebody who, can be a little bit demanding of standards. He has high standards in that regard. And I think that the sort of the individual, everyone siloed off doing their own thing, it worked great in 2021. No one criticized it. Giants won 107 games, but I think, clearly, it's like presidential administrations. You get like the polar opposite from one to the next. Yeah. And I think that the seesaw is going the other way a little bit here. Which is not to say that Melvin's the polar opposite of Kapler, but I think he definitely does bring some different elements what he believes that team structure should look like. And I think that the players, after being pretty miserable, not winning games the last couple years, not being in the playoffs, are welcoming the change.
That is the best motivation. Let's go win some games. Let's win some games. All right, Bags, I'll ask you a version of the question I ask all my guests at the end. Andy, what's your favorite restaurant right now?
I don't know if I've mentioned this one before. Maybe I have, but I was very fortunate and got to live in Japan for about 2 months at the end of 2019. And we got to go to several kaiseki restaurants where it's like a tasting menu, but it's more than that because it follows the same pattern. You have your simmered dish, your grilled dish, your sashimi course, and it goes all the way through. And then just in case you're not completely stuffed, the rice course is at the end to make sure they roll you out the door. They're really hard to find kaiseki restaurants, even in the Bay Area, but there's one that's in a little strip mall in San Mateo up near 280. It's called Wakuria. Mm-hmm. And I just went there recently, and it's fantastic. And you have to call and leave a message at precisely midnight, precisely 30 days before you want your reservation. And if you get a busy signal, just keep calling, because the message is really long. But if you get through and you get a table, I think it's a husband and wife, and I want to say they do maybe 12 covers, and I think it's just one seating a night, maybe it's two, but it's tough. You got to jump through some hoops to get the reservation, but they're not on Yelp. You can't do it on an open table or anything like that. You got to call and leave the message. So
God, it's like getting a tea time or something. My goodness, midnight, just keep calling. Excellent. And also, give me 18 on Sunday at 9. Excellent. Walker, excellent one. I love that one. Bags, like to hear you on a podcast. I was a fan of Bags and Brisby. It's not out there these days, but I am a fan of Bags on podcasts, on radios, just talking to you. So it was time to get you on here. We'll get you on more because I haven't had you on as much as I should on TK Show because you had your own podcast, but I have not heard that podcast lately. So
yeah,
we're gonna get you out. I don't know. Is it making a comeback for Bags and Brisby, or is kind of looking around right now?
Yeah, for anybody listening who enjoyed the podcast, really wish we could keep doing it. And obviously, there just aren't as many podcasts being supported by The Athletic. That was an editorial choice that they made. And, you know, I do think there may be some opportunities for us to kind of go off the grid and do our own. We're sort of thinking about that. You know, Grant still does the podcast with the Roundtable, mm-hmm. the National Baseball Podcast. So he still has a lot on his plate. I'm not sure if it's something that he'll have time to do, but we're thinking about it. And if it makes sense to do it, and I do think there's enough people out there who've expressed to us that they miss it. And, you know, that's honestly good to hear. Even though it's disappointing, it's good to hear that people enjoyed it. So just based on that alone, even if it's not something we can, you know, monetize or whatever, just to do it because people want to hear it, that's incentive enough for me. So so we'll look into it. And if that changes, I'll be sure to let you know.
Going out independently on a podcast, I kind of support that, Bags. So I support that concept. But no, it's good talking to you. It just struck me that I hadn't talked to you on the podcast in a long time. Great talking to you, great stuff. And if you aren't busy doing three other podcasts on your own independent channel, we will do this again soon, Bags.
And we'll talk off air. Yes. We'll talk off air. I'm going to get your opinions.
All right, Bags. Everybody, that is the show for today. Thanks.